Let's welcome our sports commentator, Dana Johansson, who is Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport. Kia ora, Dana.
Kia ora, Catherine.
So the rugby, we've spent very little time talking about much else in sport over the last couple of weeks. It's been an extraordinary saga. The final twist, of course, after all this build-up and, you know, the media conference where nothing got said and there was going to be a board meeting midweek and everyone's thinking, right, is this it? And then everyone's out, you know, lined up next to each other and patting each other on the back, and Ian Foster stays. I don't know how much you know or anyone really knows about the toing and froing this week and when a decision got made, but I can certainly see it's been a pretty untidy way for things to unfold.
Yeah, it's been quite an extraordinary saga, hasn't it? Just this past month has been so frenzied, and yeah, that was just really epitomised in the past week and what's gone on with, as you mentioned, that very mishandled press conference on the Sunday evening after the All Blacks' very impressive win in South Africa. And then, yeah, it seems like that really turned the tide for Ian Foster, because there he was on Wednesday, sitting nice and chummy next to Mark Robinson. And Mark Robinson says he hopes this will finally sort of draw a line under this whole saga and, you know, sort of close the book on it. I tend to think it's probably just one of the chapters in a long-running book that will continue to play out over the next year into the World Cup. I mean, you know, while for now it's kind of at least put aside that speculation that Scott Robertson is waiting in the wings to take over from Foster, I still think as soon as the All Blacks perform poorly again, if they have another misstep in this rugby championship or further down the track in the end of year tour, you know, the public and the media are still going to be baying for blood and questioning whether New Zealand rugby got this right and whether they missed their opportunity to make meaningful change to that coaching lineup.
Well, the other issue is going to be what Robertson does, and he's probably positioning himself with some of his recent comments about how he wants to coach two countries and he doesn't mind who comes first. I'm not privy to, I don't know, I know every sort of media outlet's doing its best to tell everybody exactly what happened over the last week or two. I don't know that anyone's established it. I don't know whether the board was thinking, OK, if there's another disaster in the second test, we'll make this call, and then there wasn't. I mean, who knows? It's just been so drawn out. And when you've got the coach himself, after that win, saying, I still don't know whether I'm going to be the coach, you're left thinking that it really was a last-minute call.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was quite extraordinary how that public sympathy kind of shifted in Ian Foster's favour after that win and him sort of still being left in the dark about what is happening. But I guess a counterpoint to that is there's no elegant way to deal with these things, particularly when you're in the middle of a season and have, you know, games to play and things to plan for down the track, while also seeing if you do need to make a coaching change. I think obviously, that win in South Africa turned some of the public in favour of Ian Foster, and possibly it allowed New Zealand rugby to kind of make the convenient choice of hanging on to him, because it would have been a hugely expensive, hugely messy exercise to get rid of him. So the board said it was a unanimous decision to retain Foster.
Well, it's always going to be in the end. It's a disaster if it's not. I think the other thing that did impress me was Foster's own nerve and the way he carried himself through this. That probably gives some indication to what some of his strengths are. The thing we can't ignore is that we've got Jason Ryan coming in now, who's Scott Robertson's guy at the Crusaders, sort of cherry-picked and brought into this coaching team. We've got Joe Schmidt, who was so instrumental in bringing Ireland up to the world-beating level it achieved, now out on the park. So there's clearly new brains, new strategy, and some top performers coming into the overall coaching squad.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what was also quite telling, you mentioned Foster's nerve and the way he's carried himself, is also the way the players really had his back, particularly in that South African tour. We saw Adi Savia and Aaron Smith come out on social media in support of Ian Foster, and then in the final sort of media stand-up in South Africa, Sam Kane and Sam Whitelock both made a kind of unannounced appearance to kind of have their say and show their support for their coach. So obviously I think he's a very strong people manager, and he's obviously managed to bring a strong coaching team around him, and sometimes the best coaches are those really good people managers that are able to really connect with the players and leave the strategy to other people, and perhaps that's the system they're rolling in, they're set up now.
Okay, so that's the big call, as you say, also, is whether we do get strong performances through and into the World Cup. But we'll be back arguing again about whether a change should have come midway through the cycle. But for now, I suppose they've put it to bed, certainly as a question. As you say, the debate will rage on, but that will they, won't they, has to be done and dusted now, surely. Okay. Now, the Black Ferns, crunch time for them.
Yeah, that's right. They've got their final couple of tests before the World Cup coming up in October. So they're playing Australia in the Laurie O'Riley Cup. They've got a game in Christchurch this weekend, and then they head across to Adelaide for the second test. So, it's intriguing to see that team come together. There's been a number of changes since Wayne Smith took over in terms of the on-field personnel, and it's quite intriguing to see where he's kind of got to and how much that squad has shifted and what has been a really short space of time. And what I'm really interested to see is really how he integrates a lot of the Black Ferns Sevens talent that have put their hand up to be involved with a home Rugby World Cup. I think back in 2017 there were four or five of the Black Ferns Sevens stars involved in the 15s World Cup. And then they tend to kind of disappear for another 4 years and come back into it again when the big events appear. But it's getting a lot harder to do that now when you're juggling so many events on the World Seven circuit. They've also got their own World Cup next month. So we've seen with this, he's kind of sort of, I guess, drip feeding them into the system. Players like Ruby Tui, she's committed to the 15s this whole season, so that saw her miss out on selection for the Commonwealth Games and that Sevens program. Others are trying to sort of juggle both, now we're really going to see if that's going to work out for them. So we've seen Teresa Fitzpatrick named in this opening test against Australia this weekend. Tyler Nathan Wong will make her debut. That's a name that's been around New Zealand women's rugby for so long, but she's never actually played for the Black Ferns 15s, so she's got a real test ahead of her to see if she can sort of stamp her mark in what is quite a short space of time.
And of course they're coming off what had been a really rough time as well, and yet another New Zealand Rugby NZR review, and stuff spilling out that doesn't reflect well on a team. So there's a lot riding on it again when it comes to getting things back in the in a holistic way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just can see in that camp already they seem a whole lot happier with how they're heading. A lot of positive noises coming about Wayne Smith and his coaching input, that's universal, really. That's not just limited to the women.
He's not a bad coach, let's face it.
So what looked like a pretty tough challenge for them is starting to actually look doable for this World Cup. I mean, I think if you asked anyone back in May when they released that review whether there were a chance for the World Cup, a lot of people would have said, no, but the way Wayne Smith has been able to manage the talent, bring in new talent as well, and that's meant making some really tough calls and leaving out some senior players, like even their captain Les Elder, Eloise Blackwell as well. I think he's been able to manage in a way that's kept that group happy as well.
This big controversy in golf, the Saudi-backed LIV Tour, and we've discussed this previously with Sam, and the real questions that he believes golfers making millions and millions of dollars need to ask themselves, whether they do or not, is another matter. Beyond that, of course, it's the impact on the PGA Tour, on the actual sort of most famous tour, as players are being picked off for these big dollars. What's your take on it all, and is one Tiger Woods going to be the saviour?
Yeah, so he held a secret meeting in the US this week with a lot of the top players, and that whole meeting's been kind of shrouded in secrecy, and apparently they've all agreed not to talk about what was discussed in the room. We don't talk about the meeting. But I think what it is it's an attempt to, I guess, have a united front among the players who, they've kind of been picked off, as you say, one by one for these big money deals. The latest was Cameron Smith, the mulleted Australian who won the Open Championship last month. He was the latest to join, and so I think really the players are trying to bandy together the ones that are left and put a united front and maybe suggest options as well to the PGA Tour about how they can get a fairer deal to ensure that they retain their talent.
Yeah, it is. And a fairer deal? Fairer deal, or are you up against money that you just can't match?
Yeah, well, one of the criticisms of the PGA Tour for a long time is that they don't share the profits very equally with the players. The players, they're not contractors as such. It's not like they have a union or anyone representing them. They basically turn up events and play for prize money. And, you know, it's a really hard lifestyle. And there has been talk about whether the PGA are properly sharing out the profits. And and you know, it's these questions going to be raised when, as soon as these big money offers come in from LIV, and suddenly the PGA finds a whole lot more money to up some of the prize pools and other events. If they had that money sitting there, why weren't they doing that sooner?
Okay, and our final topic for discussion today has just slipped off my screen. Here we are. We're talking about sailing, and Peter Boolings back in action with a New Zealand team. Where's this happening?
Yeah, so they've been on the SailGP circuit for a couple of seasons now, and they've really struggled to get cut through. They've kind of finished towards the bottom of the table in most events, and you know, it's obviously not a position that Peter Burling and Blair Chu could be used to. But they had a big breakthrough win earlier this month in Plymouth. They won that leg. That's their first win on the circuit, and so they're back in action this weekend in Copenhagen, and yeah, really looking to back that up. They think they've kind of finally found that kind of magic formula that's got them the win, and that they're really confident in their chances now. So it would be good to see them kind of featuring routinely on the podium rather than, you know, back in the minnow places.
Thanks, Dana. Dana Johansson, Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport.